The headlines this hour. Taliban militants patrol the Afghan capital, Kabul. A Taliban leader says it is too early to say how the group will take over governance. Iran's president says the U.S. military defeat in Afghanistan should turn into an opportunity for security and lasting peace in the country. Also in the headlines, China says it is ready to deepen friendly and cooperative relations with Afghanistan after the Taliban seize control of the country. Well, welcome to the studios in the capital, Tehran. This is Mias. Thanks for joining us. Taliban militants are patrolling the Afghan capital, Kabul, after taking over the city and declaring the end of war. The militants were seen walking through Kabul's Green Zone, the formerly heavily fortified district that hosts embassies and international organizations. The Taliban took over the presidential palace in Kabul on Sunday night after President Ashraf Ghani left the country. Reports citing Russia's embassy in Kabul said that Ghani fled the country with four cars and a helicopter full of cash. The Taliban leader said it is too early to say how the group will take over governance. He called on all foreign forces to leave the country before restructuring governance. The Taliban took full control of the country after accelerating their offensive less than 2 weeks ago. While chaos reigns in the Afghan capital, Kabul, after the Taliban takeover, five people have been reportedly killed as foreign nationals were evacuating through the city's international airport. The U.S. Defense Department said they shot two people dead at the airport without elaborating, but the cause of other victims' deaths is unclear. Thousands of Afghans, including government ministers and employees, flooded the departure terminals, desperately seeking a flight out. U.S. forces fired shots in the air to prevent civilians from running onto the tarmac, though unsuccessfully. Footage from the scene showed men trying to cling to a U.S. military aircraft as it prepared to take off. Media later reported three men fell off midair after clinging to the exterior of an aircraft. The country's civil aviation authority says the military is now controlling Kabul airspace. Meanwhile, airlines have recruited or rerouted, that is, their flights to avoid Afghanistan's airspace. Political commentator Sarbaz Ruhollah Rezvi says that the Taliban quick takeover of the country shows that there was no actual resistance from the people of Afghanistan.
Throughout these 20 years, the people in Afghanistan have not got anything out of the occupation. The so-called democracy has not resulted in anything for the people over there. So the people were actually not happy with the government. That's why you do not see any reaction on behalf of the people in different cities. Up to 1 month ago, it was a matter of, you know, some rural districts, but after that, within the last three, four weeks, we observed that the big cities of Afghanistan, one by one, collapsed without any fight. There was no clash reported. Even if you, Google and survey all these videos coming out from what took place in Herat, what took place in Kabul and other cities, you do not observe any one single shot being fired. You know, nothing is over. Yeah, from one side, Taliban forces are entering the city with bikes and with their, cars, and other side, their government forces are escaping. Actually, even in some cases, government forces are being, there is a sort of goodbye ceremony for them. Let's you go, and we are going to control this city over there. So this shows that the people were not happy with the ruling system in Afghanistan. It's the system that was the output and outcome of an occupation. That's quite clear.
Let's talk with the correspondent, Amin Alami, who joins us. Amin, at this point, we've had a Security Council meeting, emergency forum that took place. If you have any information on that in terms of highlights, and also we understand one of the pieces of news, in terms of funds that the Afghan government may have had in the U.S., the U.S. has announced that they will not have access to that. I'm curious, in your updates, whether you can tell us if there's availability of money for the regular Afghans in the country.
Of course, I talked to some political activists and former government officials here in Kabul just a few minutes ago in this regard. They are saying that they are welcoming this urgent UN Security Council meeting on Afghanistan, saying that the entire world is responsible regarding to what's going on in Afghanistan. They are saying that almost 20 years after the US invasion of Afghanistan under the guise of fighting terrorism and uprooting poppy cultivation and so on, the similar issues. Now the Taliban is back in Kabul and they are heavily patrolling inside the heart of the country. That is why they are worried. I mean, not only the people of Afghanistan, but the observers and analysts here are worried about the possible brutal behavior or move by the Taliban in coming days. This comes as the Taliban had repeatedly stressed that they have nothing to do with the lives of civilians and even military and non-military employees of the government. They have assured the people to stay home and do not be scared. But given the Afghan people has memory of the rule of Taliban over the country before the 2001, they are scared. That is why when the Taliban entered the Afghan capital Kabul just a few hours after their entrance here, there were hundreds of Afghan people who were rushing to the Kabul International Airport to find any flight to get abroad. This proves that the people of Afghanistan are now seeing that their hope and optimism about the fate of their own country has been destroyed or ruined under what they name it, irresponsible acts and irresponsible presence of U.S. military in Afghanistan over the past 20 decades. One of the slogans that brought U.S. forces here in Afghanistan was a nation building in this country. Despite this, the Afghan society still suffers from numerous challenges and problems on its way. In the meantime, many other here also believe that another important fact regarding to the takeover of Kabul, takeover of Taliban over Kabul and exactly over the entire Afghanistan, excluding the province of Panjshir, proves that the people of Afghanistan will see different days in coming days. So they want the Taliban to change their idea and pay respect to most of achievements of the Afghan people over the past 20 years. For instance, they are insisting on Taliban's respect to issues such as press freedom, women's rights, and also human rights issue. The Taliban, in response, has repeatedly said that all what is going to be done under their rule in Afghanistan would be in accordance to in accordance with Islamic and humanitarian values.
Last time we spoke, in terms of the embassies that are operational in that country, you mentioned China, Iran, I believe Turkey, and one other one. Are those the only ones that are operational in the country?
Yeah, of course. There are at least four foreign embassies that are operational in the Afghan capital, Kabul, the embassy of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the embassy of China, Turkish embassy, as well as the Russian embassy are operating in their offices inside the Afghan capital, Kabul. But the French embassy has relocated to the Kabul International Airport, and they are doing their works from inside Kabul International Airport. But the rest of embassies have so far closed their offices, and they have stopped their activities in the Afghan capital, Kabul.
Okay, thank you for that. We appreciate it. Correspondent Amin Alami talking to us from Kabul. Many thanks. Well, in the meantime, Iran's president says the U.S. defeat and its military withdrawal from Afghanistan should turn into an opportunity to restore security and lasting peace in the country. Ebrahim Raisi also called on all Afghan groups to try to achieve a national consensus. He said that Iran will spare no effort to help establish stability. Raisi said Tehran adheres to neighborly principles with Afghanistan. The Iranian president tasked the country's foreign minister and the secretary of the Supreme National Security Council to monitor the developments in the country and to keep him posted. China says it respects choices of the Afghan people, expressing hope that the Taliban establish a political structure that would lay the foundation of lasting peace in Afghanistan.
We hope that the Afghan Taliban will unite with all parties and ethnic groups in Afghanistan to build a broad and inclusive political structure that suits Afghanistan's own national conditions and lay the foundation for the realization of lasting peace in Afghanistan.
The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokeswoman called on the Taliban to ensure a smooth transition of power and the safety of Afghan and foreign citizens. She said that China welcomes the chance to deepen friendly and cooperative relations with Afghanistan. Meanwhile, Russia said its ambassador in Kabul is in contact with the Taliban leadership and will meet with the group's security coordinator on Tuesday. Moscow says it will decide on whether to recognize the Taliban government based on the conduct of the new authorities. The UK has also raised the possibility of recognizing the Taliban.
Once the Taliban proves that their words match their rhetoric, then of course any responsible government would recognize that in confined, tightly defined engagement, that would be something that might be necessary.
In an interview with the BBC, the UK Defence Secretary also called the Taliban's takeover of Afghanistan a failure of the international community, accusing Western powers of being politically short-sighted. In a separate interview, Wallace said that British forces will not return to the country to fight the militants. Well, the U.S. Secretary General has called on all countries to allow Afghan refugees and refrain from deporting them. Antonio Guterres said the conflict in Afghanistan has forced hundreds of thousands of people to flee their homes. He made the remarks at an emergency meeting of the U.N. Security Council. Guterres called for an immediate end to violence. He urged all parties, especially the Taliban, to exercise the utmost restraint to protect the lives of civilians and to respect international law and human rights. The UN chief also expressed concern over mounting violations against Afghan women. He said the UN presence in the country will adapt to the security situation, adding that the world body will remain there to deliver support for the Afghans. Iran enters a six-day nationwide lockdown as the country is trying to bring a new surge of the coronavirus pandemic under control. All government offices, banks, and non-essential businesses have been closed, while essential services will continue to operate with one-third of their staff. A one-week ban on road travel has also been placed across the country since Sunday. Iran has been grappling with the fifth wave of the COVID-19 for nearly 2 months now. The uptick is largely blamed on the Delta variant of the virus. The country registered its highest single-day coronavirus fatalities on Monday, with 655 new deaths. This total infections also rose by more than 41,000 to almost 4.47 million. So far, over 4 million Iranians have been fully vaccinated against the virus. The Lebanese Prime Minister designate says the chances of succeeding in forming a new government are higher than the chances of him stepping down in failure. After a meeting with President Michel Aoun, Najib Mikati said the formation of a government is what the country needs as soon as possible. Earlier in the day, Aoun stated that a new cabinet will be presented within a couple of days. Lebanon has been run by a caretaker administration since August 2020. Last month, Mikati was tasked with forming a new government following former Premier Saad al-Hariri's failure to craft a cabinet. The country is grappling with a deep financial crisis worsened by the ongoing political impasse. Palestinians have gathered to mourn the death of several protesters killed by Israeli forces in the Jenin refugee camp north of the occupied West Bank. Five Palestinian men were fatally shot during a raid by the Israeli forces on Monday morning, and several others were arrested. Local media say that there have been calls for a general strike across Jenin. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas expressed condolences for the lives lost, saying the incident proves the growing resistance of the Palestinian nation against the Zionist regime. The Islamic Jihad movement held Israel responsible for increasing crimes against the people of Palestine. Tensions have been running high for months over Israeli atrocities in the occupied territories. Palestinians have held a rally in the Gaza Strip to mark the 20th anniversary of the martyrdom of Abu Ali Mustafa, leader of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Ruba Shabit has more.
Palestinians took part in a rally in the Gaza Strip marking the 20th anniversary of the killing of Abu Ali Mustafa, the leader of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Abu Ali Mustafa was assassinated in an Israeli attack in Ramallah in 2001. Palestinians said they participated in this rally to renew their support for the Palestinian resistance, expressing they will continue the road of resistance in defending their rights.
Today, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine is marking the 20th anniversary of the assassination of our leader, Abu Ali Mustafa. By holding this huge rally titled With Knowledge and Resistance, we will build the next generation of freedom and victory. We view the resistance as the only way out of the current crisis. We have many allies from Iran to Syria, Lebanon and Al-Quds, which stand against the Israeli regime.
This rally comes in conjunction with the resistance front warning it won't tolerate any more Israel's reluctance to meet Palestinians' demands, especially those related to ending the suffocating siege imposed on the Gaza Strip.
Today, all Palestinian resistance factions are marking Abu Ali Mustafa's assassination, vowing to follow in the footsteps of their leaders. Today, Palestinians are involved in a continuous struggle against Israel, especially in Al-Quds, defending their lands. We call for a unified stance in fight against the occupation.
Organizers said this event marks the ongoing resistance until the main goals of all Palestinians are achieved. Resistance factions renewed their pledge to defend the Palestinian people and sent a new warning to the Israeli regime that the coming generations are the generations of liberation.
We believe that generations after generations will keep resisting against Israeli occupation. The Israeli regime should be held accountable for its crimes, and the international community should break its silence towards them.
Palestinians here stress on not only support their resistance and follow the steps of their leaders, but also defend their rights with all means until liberating all Palestine. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye bye for now.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. According to a leaked draft of a report from the world's leading authority on climate science, global greenhouse gas emissions must peak in the next 4 years. Coal and gas-fired power plants must close in the next decade, and lifestyle and behavioral changes will be needed to avoid climate breakdown. We're prepared for you an article written jointly by Fiona Harvey and Giles Tremlett. The piece is titled, Leaked United Nations Report Says Greenhouse Gas Emissions Must Peak Within 4 Years. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. According to a leaked draft of a report from the world's leading authority on climate science, global greenhouse gas emissions must peak in the next 4 years, coal and gas-fired power plants must close in the next decade, and lifestyle and behavioral changes will be needed to avoid climate breakdown. Rich people in every country are overwhelmingly more responsible for global heating than the poor, with SUVs and meat-eating singled out for the blame, and a high carbon basis for future economic growth is also questioned. The leak is from the forthcoming third part of the landmark report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, the first part of which was published recently, warning of unprecedented changes to the climate, some of them irreversible. The document, called the Sixth Assessment Report, is divided into three parts. the physical science of climate change, the impacts and ways of reducing human influence on the climate. Part 3 is not scheduled to be released before next March, but a small group of scientists decided to leak the draft via the Spanish branch of Scientists Rebellion, an offshoot of the Extinction Rebellion movement. It was first published by the journalist Juan Bordera in the Spanish online magazine CTXT. Juan Bordera told The Guardian that the leak reflected the concern of some of those involved in drawing up the document that their conclusions could be watered down before publication in 2022. Governments have the right to make changes to the summary for policymakers. The report finds the top 10% of greenhouse gas emitters globally, who are the wealthiest 10%, contribute between 36 and 45% of emissions, which is 10 times as much as the poorest 10% of countries, who are responsible for only about 3 to 5% of the greenhouse gas emissions. The summary says the consumption pattern of higher-income consumers are associated with large carbon footprints. Top emitters dominate emissions in key sectors. For example, the top 1% account for 50% of emissions from aviation. The report underlines the lifestyle changes that will be necessary, particularly in rich countries and among the wealthy globally. The report finds refraining from overheating or overcooling homes, walking and cycling, cutting air travel and using energy-consuming appliances less can all contribute significantly to the reductions in global greenhouse gas emissions that are needed. Eating patterns in many parts of the rich world will also need a change. A shift to diets with a higher share of plant-based protein in regions with excess consumption of calories and animal-sourced food can lead to substantial reductions in emissions, while also providing health benefits. The report says plant-based diets can reduce emissions by up to 50% compared to the average emission-intensive Western diet. The report notes providing modern energy to all those who currently lack it, that is, 800 million people have no access to electricity, would have a negligible effect on increasing greenhouse gas emissions. Cutting emissions in the next decade will be crucial to any hope of holding global heating within 1.5 degrees Celsius of pre-industrial levels, beyond which the impacts of climate breakdown will cause widespread devastation. The report warns weaker near-term action would place limiting warming to these levels out of reach, as it would entail assumptions about subsequent accelerated policy development and technology development and deployment, inconsistent with evidence and projections in the assessed literature. The report reaffirms the need to halve greenhouse gas emissions in the next decade to stay within 1.5 degrees Celsius and reach net zero emissions by 2050. Investment needed to shift the global economy to a low-carbon footing is also missing. According to the IPCC report, current investment falls below what is needed by a factor of 5, even to hold warming to the higher limit of 2 degrees Celsius. About $546 billion went towards cutting greenhouse gases and building resilience to the impacts of the climate crisis in 2018. The scientists say existing and planned infrastructure and investments, institutional inertia, and a social bias towards the status quo are leading to a risk of locking in future emissions that may be costly or difficult to abate. The report finds stranded assets will be a growing problem as coal-fired and gas power plants with working lives usually measured in decades will have to be decommissioned within 9 to 12 years of construction. The scientists echo the recent advice from the International Energy Agency, the IEA, that no new fossil fuel development can take place if the world is to stay within the 1.5 degrees Celsius of heating. The report says the combined economic impact of stranded fossil fuel resources and capital could amount to trillions of dollars. This risk could be reduced by shifting investment to low-carbon goods and low-carbon services. The report also finds technology to capture and store carbon dioxide has not progressed rapidly enough to play a major role yet, but technologies to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere would almost certainly be needed to hold heating to the 1.5 degrees Celsius limit. IPCC report notes there are some causes for optimism. Solar and wind energy and battery technology are now far cheaper thanks to policies that have encouraged their use. Cutting methane emissions would also be a major contributor to dampening temperature rises. The IPCC report says taking greater care of forests and land as important carbon sinks would also help to limit temperature rises, but must not be over-relied on. This comes as relatively low cost, but cannot compensate for slow emission reductions in other sectors. CTXT, the Spanish publication that leaked the draft IPCC report, said it showed that the global economy must be shifted rapidly away from a reliance on conventional GDP growth, but that the report underplays this. The Spanish publication CTXT wrote, "The essential radical change in an economic system whose perverse operation of accumulation and reproduction of capital in perpetuity has brought us to the current critical point is not clearly mentioned." The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, said it did not comment on leaks, and the purpose of the drafting process was to give the scientists time and peace to develop their assessment without external comment. Jonathan Lynn, head of the communications at the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, said, "Much of the text cited here, apparently from the first version of the summary for policymakers in the third working group, second order draft circulated to governments and expert reviewers in January, has already changed in the latest internal draft of the summary for policymakers now being reviewed by the authors of the report."
Economic divide.
Grizzly firm NSO is grappling with the fallout of a vast electronic espionage scandal. Turns out that in spite of many politicians, media personnel, and business executives without their knowledge. Not surprisingly, many people are angry. Hi, I'm Kavit Ahway. In this edition of Economic Divide, we will look at the Pegasus scandal in detail, especially its economic and business aspects, and question whether the company is guilty or is Israel to blame. Well, coming up, what is the software Pegasus, and for what reasons was this software developed? The stated objective is to track terrorists and criminals. And why was it abused? Then we will look at how the Pegasus spyware was sold to dozens of countries. like Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates, despite claiming it vets its clients based on their human rights track records. And also, finally, we will look at the Israeli spyware industry as a whole, how vast it is, and also take a look at what the economic fallouts are from the unlawful targeting and theft of critical economic intelligence. The fallout from the Pegasus software that is spied on a variety of sectors and demographics, from politicians and business executives, should not really come as a surprise. After all, for people who are familiar with the surveillance industry, Israel is a hub for surveillance technology.
I'm Jonas. I'm the managing director of ISDEF, Israel's largest defense and homeland security exhibition. Been around for more than 10 years. And we just concluded our 8th edition in June in Tel Aviv.
It appears that Israel's decades-long occupation of the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem, along with its periodic wars, actually provides a laboratory for testing and the fine-tuning of different commodities that are created or different technologies for that purpose. Joining us to break this down further is Vern Lyon. He is a former CIA officer. He's also the author of the book Eyes on Havana, which is a memoir of an American spy betrayed by the CIA. Okay, well, Vern, welcome. You have the Israeli company NSO that has made a software called Pegasus. You're aware of that, a malware that infects iOS and Android devices to enable operators of the tool to extract messages, photos, emails, record calls even, and secretly activate the microphones and the cameras. Is it safe to conclude then that the purpose of this software is spying or snooping, as some call it, while the claimed purpose was to actually overlook criminals and terrorists?
Well, no, I think those stated reasons by the NSO company are probably the ones that they want people to think are legitimate reasons. But obviously a spyware this sophisticated is one of the best Trojan horse things that ever been developed. And obviously it's being used in a lot of different ways, more ways than we can probably imagine. And obviously it's been used not only to spy on dissidents and journalists and heads of state, but obviously it could have been used also to target its greatest supporter, the United States of America. So, it raises a lot of serious questions about who uses it and for what purposes.
Okay, thank you so much for that. That's Vern Lyon, former CIA officer. Well, as you mentioned over there, the biggest customer of the Pegasus software and Israeli software for surveillance is the United States of America. It's time now for our InfoNews section. As you're well aware by now, this is where we take a look at other economic news from around the world. Now, just a note, we look at topics that are considerations for future shows and may not necessarily be the most current news. Okay, first up, Google copyright violations. Google has actually been fined by the EU. It continues to battle EU oversight companies. In this case, it was France's competition watchdog that fined Google this amount of money. It's a row with media companies about paying them for their content. Next up is EU farmers. The curious case here, from the farmers' point of view, is whether they are reaping the benefits of these trade deals that the EU is making. Now, by the year 2030, 12 countries are expected to be the destination of 13% of the EU agri-food exports and the origin of 34% of the EU agri-food imports. Now, the president of the ICMSA, the Agricultural Service in the Republic of Ireland, has rejected any reports that state EU farmers benefit from these deals. Next up, we go to China, China's millennials. Now, this was of particular interest to us because we made a comparison, or it made a comparison, to American millennials. Said that a typical Chinese millennial makes $22,000 a year but has no student debt and has grown up in an economic boom. Meanwhile, an average American millennial has a student debt of almost double that, and many have opted to live with their parents. Our final look, Brazil may be experiencing a huge comeback, a sensational comeback by some regards. With the former president, Lula, Inácio Lula da Silva's political rights restored, polls suggest that he would thrash current president Jair Bolsonaro for the upcoming elections. Now, Lula's party's name is the Workers' Party, and you can imagine how what that means if it translates into improvements in the economy for Brazil. All right, we're headed for a quick break here on Economic Divide, but please stay right where you are. We'll be right back.
Listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Time now for in-depth section. The surveillance industry is vast, but you would not know it. Israel is actually one of the leading manufacturers of software that surveil on people. But that is nothing compared to how the U.S. is spying on its own citizens and even allies. Well, itself, the software and its function as a spying tool has been blasted many times over by many. Well, just in case you aren't aware how powerful a spying tool it is, Pegasus software, that is, well, here's a reminder. Courtesy of The Guardian.
With just a single text, it can bypass your phone's security and install spyware that grants complete access to your device.
It can turn on your microphone. It can turn on the microphone even when you're not using a phone call and just record what you're doing in the room.
Well, Edin Omanovic is an advocacy director at Privacy International. He has said that it is very alarming that surveillance capabilities developed in some of the world's most advanced spying agencies are actually being packaged and exported around the world for profit. He also has said the proliferation of such intrusive surveillance capabilities is extremely dangerous and poses a real and fundamental threat to human rights and democratization. Now, why he takes that stance is pretty obvious. The watchdog group that he works for, Privacy International, is a group that investigates surveillance, actually released a report back in 2014 on the global surveillance industry. It identified 27 Israeli companies. That's the highest number per capita of any entity or regime in the world. Then you have the U.S. that leads the world, but in sheer number of surveillance companies, that number is 122. Now, these numbers have surely increased since then. Let's now follow the spy trail. Many Israeli surveillance companies actually help U.S. companies collect information, such as the U.S. phone giant AT&T. So basically, you have Israeli surveillance companies helping AT&T collect data. It collects internet traffic and billions of emails. Now, that information was then forwarded to the U.S.'s National Security Agency, the NSA. Now, this was revealed in leaks by the now famous whistleblower, Edward Snowden.
My name is Ed Snowden. I'm 29 years old. I work for Booz Allen Hamilton as an infrastructure analyst for NSA in Hawaii. If you realize that that's the world that you helped create, and it's going to get worse with the next generation and the next generation who extend the capabilities of this sort of architecture of oppression, you realize that you might be willing to accept any risk, and it doesn't matter what the outcome is. If they want to get you, they'll get you in time. The greatest fear that I have regarding the outcome for America of these disclosures is that nothing will change.
Okay, that gives you an idea there. And this is what Snowden has actually said about the Pegasus spying software today.
But the NSO group is only one company of many. And if one company smells this bad, what's happening with all the others? I mean, when I look at this, what the Pegasus project has revealed is a sector where their only product are infection vectors, right? They don't, they're not security products. They're not providing any kind of protection, any kind of prophylactic. They don't make vaccines. The only thing they sell is the virus.
Now, why does all of this matter? I mean, what does this even have to do with Israel, with Pegasus software. Well, because what we're about to tell you here makes what Pegasus did look like child's play. And it all started with this revelation. CIA Chief David Petraeus, back in the year 2014, said, "We will spy on you through your dishwasher." What does that exactly mean? Spy through our dishwashers? Well, this is what he actually said. Transformational is an overused word, but I do believe it properly applies to these technologies, in reference to, of course, the online appliances, smart appliances that are connected online. And he further on went to say, particularly to their effect on clandestine tradecraft. Now, this meant more and more personal and household devices, from TVs to car navigation systems to light switches, laptops, cell phones, well, the list is actually endless, can be used and most probably is being used to spy on people. Well, do you have a hard time believing that? I mean, we sure did. But let us show you this piece of evidence that is indeed the case. What you see over here, Samsung Smart TV Privacy Policy. It actually issued this. It's in the boxes. And it says, please be aware that if your spoken words include personal or other sensitive information, that information will be among the data captured and transmitted to a third party through your use of voice recognition. Just let that sink in. To a third party through voice recognition, personal or other sensitive information. Yes, that what you say in front of your phone could actually be listened to by somebody else. I mean, this is kind of reminiscent of George Orwell's book, 1984. This excerpt here, any sound that Winston made above the level of a very low whisper would be picked up by it, moreover, so long as he remained within the field of vision, that is, in reference to a television. Well, for further analysis on this matter, let's bring in David Lindorf. He's an American reporter who joins us. David Lindorf is an American investigative reporter. He actually has been a columnist for Counterpunch and a contributor to Business Week, The Nation, Extra, and Salon.com. His work actually has been highlighted by Project Censored 2004, 2011, and 2012. David, welcome. So, Pegasus spyware used to target journalists. You know that, a consortium of 17 media outlets, as it was reported. Activist researchers found that this software targeted their smartphones. And you have lawyers, teachers, and other people like executives also to have been targeted. French President Emmanuel Macron, Iraqi President Barham Saleh. What do you think about that? I mean, do you think that their motives, what are the motives here by developing this software?
Well, I haven't seen any articles that have made that point yet, but it would be surprising if they weren't using this to go after the organizers of the, you know, the boycott of products made in the occupied West Bank. And, you know, because that's a major concern of the Israeli government. So, and there's been a lot of activity around that within the U.S. by Israeli organizations, pro-Israeli organizations, and probably Mossad. So it would be a surprise to me if they weren't using this also to go after the organizers of BDS, which is quite a successful boycott campaign in the U.S.
All right. Now, this investigation was published by 17 media organizations, as we said, led by the Paris-based nonprofit journalism group by the name of Forbidden Stories. Now, the following takes a closer look at Forbidden Stories' executive director and founder, Laurent Richard, who made statements on this matter.
Spying, and the depth of it, is at the heart of the Pegasus scandal. Heads of states, like from France, are furious. But as a source of the information, the Paris-based non-profit journalism group Forbidden Stories, credible? executive director and founder, Laurent Richard. His information appears solid.
So Pegasus is the name of a software that is sold by the NSO company. And NSO company is selling that software to state actors, to governments. And the mission of that software is to spy and to get all the information about the targets.
His reference to a list is interesting, which is where the French president's name appears, along with other heads of states.
We see the phone numbers of the President Macron in the list. We don't have the evidence that he was really infected by the software. We see at least an interest from an NSO customers with the Morocco authorities to enter the phone numbers into their system.
Even stranger is why the French president is using a personal phone to conduct official business.
It's quite concerning because actually we need to know why the president is still using a personal phone to have some conversation, and is that a good idea to do so? The second thing is that we need to know exactly what happened with the phone of the president and how much transparent the French authorities will be about the result of that kind of investigation.
And the depth of the malware is revealed by Laurent Richard.
This is a private market with no regulation at all. So there is nothing to protect you. And the bad news in that you, if you are infected, if your phone is hacked, you don't know that because there is no sign. You don't have to click on anything. It's an invisible attack. It's an invisible attack against democracy because you see with the profile of the targets, with the journalists, the human rights defenders, all those people who are playing a big role in the societies because they are informing the public opinion, because they are playing an economic role, because they want to change the political system, all those people who at some point will represent a danger.
So far, the NSO Group, a private company, has denied the reports that the Pegasus software was responsible for mass surveillance of journalists, human rights defenders, and business executives. Now, what makes the story interesting is that it has insisted and reassured that all sales were approved by Israel. Now, doesn't that then make Israel guilty? Oppressive technology is how this software is described. Experts have warned about Israel's long history of exporting cutting-edge weaponry in order to improve or foster diplomatic relations. Well, Israeli weapons are exported through the weapons trade with countries in the Middle East, Africa, and in Asia. Joel Guzansky from the Institute for National Security Studies in Tel Aviv has admitted that Israeli weapons exports through the weapons trade with countries in the Middle East, Africa, and Asia. He further said, sometimes the damage is bigger than the benefit, since Israel might be seen as someone who helps autocratic regimes suppress civil society. Okay, both of our guests rejoin us for this section, Vern Lyon, former CIA officer, and David Lindorf, who's an American reporter. Vern, let me first come to you. Pegasus spyware was sold to dozens of countries like Bahrain, like Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, despite them being accused of human rights violations, and claiming that it actually vets the clients based on their human rights records. And here is where it gets interesting, Vern. Insiders disclosed that the important role played by the Israeli Ministry of Military Affairs when it came to putting NSO Group's clients. Multiple sources actually have corroborated the fact that Israeli authorities actually pushed for Saudi Arabia to be added to the list of customers despite the NSO Group's hesitations. So case is closed. Israel is guilty, isn't it?
Well, guilty of what? Selling a software, making it available to governments in the Middle East. Obviously, the Israelis are way ahead of most countries with this kind of software. And since it's a private company, it is going to sell it, not just to governments, but to private companies as well. And how they can control the use of it is a good question. So is Israel guilty of perhaps letting the software be used by unscrupulous governments, organizations, people? Yes, I think they probably are.
I mean, isn't there something wrong, though, Vern, with selling software that can be used to target, let's say, dissident group?
Well, if the original purpose of the spyware, when being sold to governments, was to carry out what I would call legitimate intelligence activities, which all governments do if they have the capabilities, that's understandable.
All right, David, over to you to sell spyware with the aim of not only spying without one's knowledge, but to actually crack down on people, especially when the people are revolting, let's say, or they're opposed to the governments. Regimes are using it to basically silence dissent, like Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, or some African countries. Isn't there something wrong with that, David?
Well, I don't know enough to say that they're guilty. I know enough to say that reputable news organizations have said that they've probably done this and that there's government involvement from top to bottom in NSO. It's former Mossad people. You know, it's doing things that the Israeli government wants done. It's to you know, states that the Israeli government is supportive of. And so, you know, it's sort of like if A plus B and B plus C, then probably A plus C. You know, I'll go far enough as to say that, you know, I find reliable news organizations are saying this. So you know, I wait to see more. The French government obviously is investigating it now because of the involvement of NSO doing things to actually their president, Macron. You know, we'll see. I will not be astonished at anything that these investigations turn up. And I'm sure that other U.S. news organizations now are looking into it further.
Okay, that was David Lindorf. He is an American reporter. I'd like to thank him. And also I'd like to thank former CIA officer Vern Lyon for his thoughts. I'll be back with my final thoughts. The Israeli surveillance industry is neatly packaged and sold as security tools for respective governments. But the wider and more important use that it has for the buyers, well, to make sure that people's movements and the conversations are controlled, especially if these are opposing views against the government. Now, whistleblower Edward Snowden can give a better explanation as to where things stand when it comes to this very important issue, which basically, at a minimum, is an invasion of privacy.
The solution here for ordinary people is to work collectively. This is not a problem that we want to try and solve individually, because it's you versus a billion-dollar company. What can you do to protect yourself from Google? A little, but you can't solve the problem. It's the same when we're talking about the NSO group. You can make yourself safer, right? But we will not be safe until we change the game.
That does it for this edition of the program. Your questions and comments are always welcome. From Mikovit Tafle and the entire team, it's goodbye. Until next time.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.